Welcome to Seize the GM. I'm your host, Zendad.
I'm your co-host, Jules.
And I'm Null Operations.
Have you ever had a great idea for a campaign? Do you have a bunch of friends who want to play an RPG but have no one to run it?
Do you want to see what the world is like behind the GM screen instead of in front of it? Well, we're here to help you do just that.
Each week, the three of us will be discussing various GMing topics. Terminology, maps, atmosphere, world building, you name it. So sit back and relax, and let us help you improve your art of GMing, one show at a time.
Banter, banter, banter. And we are entering the banter segment. Hey, guys, welcome back.
And welcome back. Welcome back.
Awesome.
How has everybody been?
It's been a week or two.
It's been some time. I'm still digesting, sort of, maybe.
Yeah. No, I did not have the traditional Thanksgiving, which was so good to not have that.
Well, it depends on what is a traditional Thanksgiving. For me, it was, I had dear friends over, I cooked a turkey, it was good, we played board games, we did Betrayal at the House on the Hill, Cards Against Humanity, Epic Spell Wars of the Battle Wishes on the summit of Mount Skullfire.
No, I'm talking like just, you know, the turkey dinner, and I'm tired of that sort of thing. So we went to a Brazilian steakhouse for Thanksgiving.
I don't understand. Tired of turkey?
Yeah.
Do you roast turkeys more regularly than other families?
We usually have about 3 or 4 of them a year.
That's a good start.
I mean, and that's not the holiday ones.
Okay. So, okay. You may have hit that requisite level of turkey.
Yeah, I hit it very early in the year. I don't need it this late into the year. So yeah, no. So instead, we decided that we wanted to start doing things that are more of experiences with our daughter. So we all get dressed up, we go out and have dinner at a nicer restaurant somewhere in town, and it's actually kind of fun. And we do the same thing at Christmas time usually. Like for Christmas dinner, we'll go somewhere else. Because it's just one of those things. It's fun to do something that's not the standard. And when people are like, well, what do? It's like, you go and you eat, and then you go home, and like, you don't have to fight with doing dishes.
Pretty much the same, everything. Pretty much like, the same things.
I got up at 10 o'clock in the morning and had, or like 9 o'clock in the morning, I think, and had lunch at 11:30. So, yeah.
Dude.
And then I came home. Like, so there was like no getting up super early, spending 2 days before, brining, doing all of this, getting all the sides. No, none of that. We literally do.
But that's part of the fun.
Yeah, for me, see, well, depending on. Yeah.
Close family. We have my mother-in-law, my brother-in-law, and my wife and my daughter and I. That's it. So since that's all we have, there's no point in trying to make like this massive meal for 5 people that it's already, you know, juggling trying to get everybody to eat the same thing in one sitting. So we were just like, let's go somewhere else. Let's let them do all the cooking, all the prep work, all the cleanup. All we have to do is show up, pay for it, and be done. And I spent less doing that than I would buying dinner for 5 people. So I made up.
Yeah, but I come from a cooking heavy
yes,
family.
Yes, you do.
Same here. But yeah, now this time, like usually I just do a turkey breast, but one of my good buddies provided the turkey. So I went pureed a whole bunch of vegetables through that with the very salty chicken stock and spices, boiled it for, God, almost a whole day, let it cool, fridged it, brined the turkey, and then I coated it with garlic butter.
Now, see, I appreciate all of that. But
garlic butter and the way I cooked it, which was awesome,
days like, preparing this. I didn't have to do anything. That was the joy of mine.
Well, no, exactly. You didn't have to do anything.
See, and that was what made me happy. Yeah. I was thankful that I didn't have to do anything.
Well, and there you go.
So, but, you know, we did get to hang around. We got to do things the rest of the day. We weren't constantly worrying about doing something else. It was just, it was pretty laid back. It was nice. So, though we have to say, I want to say this, like, right now, before we get too much further along and we're in this fun banter section, the reason why the previous episode is late is because of the holidays. Because they're having to manually do all of the post-production since they are a paid service. And with the holiday season, I'm sure that they got backed up and
people get to spend time with their families.
Yeah, so,
there's some technical issues getting worked out in the patch, and they're doing a great job doing some work with the audio file. But some people went home and had turkey dinner with their family, and you know what?
Can't blame them.
I'm okay with that.
So, yep. Even though,
don't worry, I'll be checking on everything tomorrow, seeing how everything's
going.
So
we'll get it out as soon as we can. We'll probably end up being about a week off from that, but know that it was done. It was ready. We even recorded it early. Just the holidays
have
a way of doing.
We do value you, our listeners, which is why you should come hang out with us on the Facebook group at facebook.com/seizethegm. And find us on Twitter and join us. Become a patron on Patreon. All of that good requisite social media plugging that we do in the shows that you're probably used to every podcast you listen to saying. And we'd really appreciate it for the holidays if you would go by the Apple iTunes store and leave us a rating and review.
That is a great
preferably
one, too.
A five-star
Seriously,
review
folks.
With great words. As a holiday gift, we would appreciate 2 minutes of your time for a star and some kind words about the effort we put in here.
Let's just put it this way. You know, the more people like us, the more we'll be able to do stuff, and the less I'll be crying myself to sleep at night, because I look really ugly when I cry, and it's pissing my husband off.
Yeah, sometimes he records it and sends copies.
I know. I feel bad. I actually bought him a lapel mic for some upcoming awesome stuffs. And him and I were on the final episode of Join the Anarchy. And because he is a very animated and gesticulating individual, and he also ended up playing a chaos mage named Mayhem. Locusts everywhere.
That
That's
is
all
hilarious
I say.
And awesome. And I'm so glad you got him a lapel mic because he needs one.
I know. I understand he's ADD like me, but his manifests very differently. So I'm like, all right, if I do this, you know, I'm half tempted to, you know, I was like, no, you don't get to do it with a shirt on because that he might hit around with the mic. No, I'm just going to tape it to your chest. God. Dude, he has no chest hair. What's your problem?
Huh? No.
Yeah. Remember, he does not. He is not very furry.
Either,
thank God.
I have some and I don't want to tape over what little I have.
That would not be pleasant.
No.
Well, not for you. I mean, you're like a Wookiee.
Technicalities.
Not as bad as my buddy Barry, whose nickname is Wookie. Pretty much everything from the neck down, he is very furry, but neck up, no hair.
That's hilarious. Bald.
He's like, he can rock the look. Yeah.
That's fun. Well,
you know. So, well, you know, there's actually no really awesome way. Well, actually, with traveling for the holidays, traveling, being a GM. There we go. I figured out a way to sneak into it. Yay!
Yay!
Main topic segue.
Main topic. Which I have lovingly referred to as MGM will travel.
I do like that better because not everybody, I confuse words and some of my friends didn't even know what itinerant meant. You know, I always mix that up in my head with indigent and itinerant, and I don't know why. I think it's because I read the words first.
Probably.
Before I ever heard them.
Yeah.
It could be. But I mean, it's easy to GM at home where you're setting it up and you've got your space and you've got all of your stuff ready for you.
You've got your boppies. You've got everything. Not only that, but your own little comfort items that, you know, if things get stressful, 2 seconds, go pee and you breathe and you can come back.
I've got a comfort item in my list of five I stuck in the doodly-doo.
Ah.
Which mixed drink is that, my friend?
We'll get there.
Yes, we will.
Good.
Yes, we will. But it is important to think about because, like, this actually has happened to me very recently. When I moved, my group was, we hosted the game. I had all of my minis, all of my landscape, all of my books, all of my stuff. And it was all in the same room that we gamed in. So I didn't have to go anywhere. I just had to turn, grab something, boom, and I had it. I mean, I had doodads, you know, like my crit decks, my fumble decks, my spell effects that I like created. Like I've got a web spell that I can just literally throw down and it is exactly the size of the web. You know, all of those things. And then we moved. And now I had to change my game from in my house to one of my players' houses.
Mm-hmm. Here's the thing. You have to figure what is... You can't take everything with you. Believe me, I tried that once and my back never recovered. I got a wheelie cart now. But the thing is, you have to figure what is the most important? Is there any way to consolidate? Or, you know, it's like, what do your players have? Can you work with your players?
Step one. One of the first thing you absolutely need to take as an itinerant traveling non-hosting GM is the core rule book for the game you're playing. Yes, you could do an electronic version, but at the basic level, you want to flip through and look up some rules while your players are doing something else, and you don't want them to know what rule it is you're looking up. You can keep flags, notes, marginalia in there. I am a firm...
You can do that with electronic copies now, too.
You don't retain them as well. We can go into the psychology of that later. But
I actually
I do better with electronic.
You are abnormal in that respect, yes. Where it is actually more difficult and people have a more difficult time retaining information from an electronic copy than a physical. But if you've seen my list, electronic references are next, but the core game book for what you're running is the first thing I say a GM ought to be taking with them for one of these traveling games.
Yeah, that one at the very least, you have to have that main book because without it, it's very easy for people to just be like, oh, well, what do you need to know? It's like, I don't want you to know what I need to know. you know?
The thing is, you're not, since, you know, the whole, you're not on your own turf, You know, if, you know, because with our D&D game, we played at a, we played at one of our friend's house, and it wasn't the GM's house. So luckily for him, he has an almost encyclopedic knowledge. But, you know, each of us would bring whatever books that we had, and we would pool them. But, you know, usually what would happen is the GM would ask for, you know, he didn't want to let us know what he was looking up. Unless it was the, hey, do you know where the picture of XYZ is? You know, okay, that's fine. But, you know, he would always have it. So we had no idea, you know, he always had his own, but we'd all pool our own resources.
Sure. Sure.
You know, but the other thing he would actually ask, you know, but if here's the thing though, usually I don't want people to know, but you know, if everyone else pools, usually, you know, if you get to working with the group, you know, they'll be able to kind of target, forget exactly what book you were looking at, or they really won't look or something like that. You know, you actually have to, you know, if you're all pooling resources, you know, that you're going to have to ask for a little bit of, he's like, hey guys, look over there for a second.
Well, I mean, that'll get to my second thing about what to bring, about what may be useful. But besides that physical core mechanic book, mm-hmm. what's the next thing each of you would say a traveling GM needs to take?
My tablet.
My laptop.
Yeah. Electronic references yeah. were my second thing.
Yeah, because see, for me, it's
that has my game notes.
It actually has nothing to do with everything. That. For me, strictly the only reason that I need my laptop is I run Sirenscape. And I don't like how it runs on my tablet. I love how it runs on my laptop. Because the screen is, because I've got an Android tablet, it doesn't quite fit correctly. And it's not any fault of Sirenscapes or anything else. It's just the nature of trying to work on such a large array of sizes that certain elements of it become lost that I don't have as much access to as with my laptop.
Yep. I mean, my tablet / laptop, usually what I'll do for me is either laptop, Chromebook. My tablet is small enough I can throw it in my purse, and I keep that usually for emergency references, for like other people at the table. Like, say two people need the magic item compendium. I'm pulling sure. up D&D. You know, it's like, all right, okay, you do this so I can. I still want to facilitate things going yeah. faster. You know, and also there's electronic. You know, I can do this on my laptop. You know, game master tools, yeah. you know, I'm not saying you have to get like a, you know, a little Chromebook, you know, sometimes, you know, also for, well, I have absolutely no artistic abilities, i.e. my stick figures have polio. So usually it's really cool because there's a lot of really awesome maps out there and stuff, or pictures and stuff. And ooh, I can use that for ooh, very fast
just
reference.
So you guys know. We have a Pinterest because I use Pinterest for this specific thing.
I haven't logged on to Pinterest in a while.
And I use that all the time. Like I'm usually
no, see, actually
adding
for,
stuff.
Yeah, for gaming and for inspiration as a scrapbook, it actually works
and I
great.
Have tons
I mean
of
I'm
like
more-
maps. Because there are people that are just upload, you know, there's maps all over the internet. Well, they're all consolidated right here. I don't have to guess. I can just go through them. I've also got like alphabets and all these other like basically fonts of different alphabets and everything and character ideas for like, this is what this dude looks like. This is what this dude looks like. And I break it down by like, I need a fighter. So here's all the fighter guys and here's these and like, these are the gods. And I have all of this stuff in Pinterest. And I started one just for the show so that I could start putting more things in there. So if people start following it, then they have those, they have access to all of that too. So
that, yeah. The thing is, I mean, for me, I never really got much out of Pinterest, but the thing is, like, a laptop / tablets, Chromebook, those are multi-tools, yeah, which is really, really helpful.
Well, see, and I've got a much more stripped down reason for taking it, and it's the literal ton of books in one tablet.
Yes.
And
oh, yeah.
And that I like for the less often used references that I still may need that I don't necessarily want the players to know I'm looking up. Some mm-hmm. And like I said, I'm the core game book at my, I can get through it faster thumbing through a physical copy with my notes person, but that ability to have 100 PDF books that I can get to the information in is invaluable. But what's next? What's the third thing on your lists?
I call it the journal, or, you know, kind of like, you know, it's the notebook. It's the, not only for, okay, what happened at the game, this and that, the other, or, but it's also the, hey, dumbass, remember this next time. Because, you know, first time you're gaming at a, you're running a game at a convention, say, you know, there's going to be something you're going to forget that's going to be something that you're not going to realize, stuff that you don't know. You know, it's a good way to kind of make notes on shit like that.
Yeah, see, that's where... what I use, because a lot of stuff that I do is on my laptop now, is either in Google Drive. I'll just have like an open thing and I'll just add the few notes that I need. But usually what I use is I use Scrivener, because I'm that guy that uses something for writing novels to keep all of my game notes in.
I mean, considering how I've described what I do, that would probably be a good idea for me, but I'm also stubborn and recalcitrant.
Yeah, it takes
my next thing
a lot to learn how to use Scrivener well, and I don't use it well. I know that I don't. There are so many like tricks and everything else that I don't know about, but some... just as a little aside, like some libraries, like I know that my library offers lynda.com classes just as part of having a library card, and they don't cost anything. You can just use them. Here you go.
My next recommendation, a GM screen.
Yeah.
You can A, never have enough of them. B, don't care if it's to hide your dice rolls, or because in theory they're designed with a set of reference charts for the system you need to be easily found.
There.
Or C, because it looks cool.
Yeah, well, see, this is where mine is a little bit different. I just recently acquired what I'm going to be converting into my GM screen.
Absolutely acceptable to make your own, but a GM screen of some kind.
Well, it also, what I'm using it for is I'm going to use it for transporting my minis.
I figured this was going to have a dual
purpose. Oh, yes, it is. And this is the best part. It's a castle.
What?
At Michael's, I found one of those wooden, it's a wooden castle that it's got the latch and then it swings open.
This is kind of like the old like Castle Grayskull portable playset kind of a thing.
Yeah.
Except it's all wood. So I can paint it what I want it to look like. I can do, there's like window cutouts. So what I'm going to do is, because I have things like vellum and other things, I'm going to actually draw like, you know, the crossbars and like, or stained glass, and I can actually like go in and actually color them and then glue them on the inside. And that way people can't see in, I can still use it, and I can fill the inside of it with whatever information I need. And I'm going to build a dice tower so that I can roll my dice into it and they'll land into a specific spot.
So, Jules, what's your next thing for people to take, for GMs to have to travel?
All right, well, it's not exactly GMing stuff, but personally, and this is going to sound weird as hell, baby wipes. Because one, stuff spills, get stuff off your hands, you can use it to wipe mats. It's a multi-purpose cleaning thing.
Yeah.
It sounds stupid as shit, but you know, you don't know what you're going to encounter wherever the hell you're going. You can wipe your hands clean.
Yeah, if you've ever been to convention.
I love it, but it is germ central.
Oh, yeah, my kit's going to get reevaluated for conventions this year. All right.
Yep. You can get a teeny one of those. And there's one, and these are cool. You have in the little hard cases, and then the hard cases, you can actually recycle those. And I usually fill those up with like writing utensils. Like I also have a little like soft bag in there, but I put like my writing utensils and you know, something like that. Laser pointer.
See, I'll put that on the secondary list. I'm not going to put that in my first list. Yeah. But again,
I'll be honest. It depends if you're going to if you're traveling to a friend's house, maybe not so much, but convention.
Yeah. Yes. There is that. There's a convention GMing. You know what? That might actually be another good show to do is convention GMing. Like, what are the things that you should really bring?
Yeah.
Ooh. And
that's actually a good thing because convention GMing is very different from just traveling to a buddy's house.
Well, and we can see if we can grab a demo team agent from that we know who have done a bunch of it and have them also have their input for what they see players not bringing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ooh.
But.
Okay. Before, there's a couple of them I'm thinking about.
Yeah.
This is going to be fun.
Before we move on though, I've got a comfort item on I've got two things left on the list I wrote down. One, I don't care if it's electronic or if it's tangible, have a separate big adventure outline, one page, short, sweet, one sheet. That is the adventure outline and a short form of NPC notes. If you can't take the 3-inch 3-ring binder with you, like I've got for this campaign, have one single sheet of paper or the equivalent that has the adventure outline, a couple of high point encounters, and a short form stat box for the NPCs you need.
Yeah.
If you can't make it so you can fake it.
Yeah.
Dude, cheat sheets are completely allowable. This isn't school anymore, kids. There's no permanent record.
No, that's not true. You have permanent records with me.
Actually, you know what?
Oh, no, there's no permanent record kind of a thing. Like, it's going to get you a detention and problem with the principal.
But here's...
You're allowed cheat sheets and notes and
here's an
whatever.
Idea. I have multiple things that I use. Like, I have, like... short form NPCs. I've got longer form NPC sheets. I don't know if anybody would even be interested in any of those, but I might create like a, here is a place, like a repository on the website where people can come find those.
Or Patreon rewards.
Or as a Patreon reward.
How about you, listeners? Would you like to become patrons? Would you like to contribute, say, $1 a month and see additional notage?
Yeah, because actually that's one thing that I've considered doing is right now we have it set up to where it's in every episode. And I'm thinking about maybe converting that to a monthly.
But we will discuss that.
Yeah.
Because I do have one last item, and it's a comfort item. And it's bourbon. It's a bottle of nice but not too nice bourbon can make that game go by much better. Now,
rum. Mine's rum.
For me, I'm talking about the $25 to $30 bourbon range. So not your rail, but also I'm not necessarily going to be traveling with a bottle of Baker's. So
yeah,
that for me, a little sip here offered as a reward to players. Maybe if they do something really interesting, or if you forget it and they bring you bourbon as tribute.
Tribute is always
this also good. creates This also creates great. Yes. Also, make sure your bag is empty in case your players bring tribute. But those are kind of the high points of what to take. A game book, an electronic reference, some kind of a GM screen, an overview of your adventure, something to record notes in of the game and of questions that you may need to remember outside of the game, and bourbon or some other comfort item as appropriate to your GMing style.
Yep. One of my friends actually has a huge honking thermos, and she makes herself a pot of tea before coming to game. She fills it up with the tea. And she has a little, and she, it's this cute little teacup thing. And it's, for her, it's the act of like pouring the tea and then just, you know, it's this weird Zen thing, you know? I don't get it.
It's a moment of focus.
Oh, I get it.
The ritual of tea. The ritual of tea is significant.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And it can be. And sometimes you need to do that. Definitely. So.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But find us on the Facebook group, on Twitter, find us on the Patreon, and tell us what's your bare basics minimum GM travel kit.
Mm-hmm. Oh, one thing we forgot to mention. It is the most important thing. Your dice.
Oh, no. That's in my second level. That's not in my bare minimum.
Yeah. I'm going to have to agree.
Nope, because here's the thing. My dice are actually kind of one of my comfort things.
Well, see, if that's your comfort item.
But for me, though, also, having my own dice in my own dice bag, it's a little bit of my environment that I actually do control. And it's something that's familiar, and I'm actually able to focus better when I'm running. If I'm using someone else's dice, it's like, this isn't mine. So because the thing is, like, if I'm running it, I need, you know, something when we're telling the fate of the world and we're rolling dice on it, I'd like to use my dice. So if things go to hell, it's my fault entirely and I can't blame someone else's dice.
Yeah. I can see that.
Like I said, for me, I can understand that. For me, that's on my secondary level. I trust my players to have dice. And you know what? If their dice hate them, they can't blame my dice.
Yeah, there is that.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
But moving on.
Yes, moving on. I think that's time to roll in to the next segment. And now we enter Stat Blocks. This is a segment where you can use something that we've created in your game tonight.
All right. Well, unfortunately, I think because of, well, life, the universe, and everything, Zen has done way too much work, and I don't think you weren't able to get one finished, huh?
I have been swamped between...
It's okay. You get to have a week off.
Between everything mm-hmm. else that yeah, I've been doing the night before we started recording, I got my new laptop.
And you got to set it up.
And I had to set it up. I spent...
Turn up your gain next time.
That's on the mixer.
Oh.
It's possible.
All right, well, turn up the settings on your computer then. I don't know.
It's new. We're still figuring it out right this minute, so...
Yeah.
Well, but see,
I'm giving you crap. You know that.
But see, if you're not able to go first, then... Jules, what you got?
I was going to say Zen pick, but all right, y'all suck. Okay, guys. Today I have the City of Ash. The City of Ash, once a stunning metropolis, the center of learning, culture, and trade. It was a city that exemplified all that humanity could achieve, and now it stands to a monument of humanity's sins of hubris and complacency, and as a warning. For centuries, the city was governed wisely and fair. Prosperity and hope seemed to grow with each generation. The citizens knew neither want nor fear. The city rolled well on the dice of fortune when it came to governance, but all it takes is one leader who is not of the caliber of his forebearers to destroy what it took centuries to build. Not much is known about the city's final lord. All that is certain is that he abandoned the role of leader and protector and instead expected to be protected and catered to. and unfortunately his attendants and advisors enabled this behavior. So when a civil war threatened his city, he took that as a personal slight and vowed vengeance. Using the vast resources of arcane and heretical knowledge at the city had amassed, he found a solution. If the citizens did not serve him, did not love him, then they would take away the citizens' choice. They would serve him, love him, or die. So the spells were cast, and the lives of the citizenry were bound to him. And out of fear, for a while, they served him and loved him. But he grew discontent with the lack of authenticity. Discontent turned to frustration. Frustration turned to rage. So the Lord gave the order that doomed the city. He ordered his army to enslave the citizenry and put to the sword and burn all who resisted. The magical backlash was brutal and total. He had bound the lives of his people to him, and by attacking them, he warped the magic, turning it back on himself. And so the people burned, and he burned, and the city became ash. The city still stands there. The vengeful soul of the last leader is forever bound to the city as punishment. And since the spirits of the citizenry are also bound to him, they are forced to wander the city, full of rage, full of hate, for their leader that betrayed them, for their eternity of forced servitude. So be wary, adventurer. These poor souls may turn their rage blindly toward you. But if luck is on your side, you may find a shade not yet consumed by hate, and they may attempt to aid you, if you're willing to try and grant them their freedom. End the reign of the last ruler. Free the citizens so they can rest. And let the city of Ash crumble and blow away.
Nice. I like it.
All right, so I'm not always quite as good, but sometimes I can come up with something decent.
So, you know, just something, you know.
A little bit. Something.
Well, no, because it is like Garde Manger comes up with some of the coolest things ever. You know, I'm like, dang, how can I pull? You know, it's like, and Zen, usually you come up with this, and they bebop all over the place and just in style and substance. I'm like, I love that. Mine is just weird.
Well, speaking of bebop and style and substance.
Like how I did that?
Yeah, it was nice. We're going to go into the Cat's Meow. It sits downtown, just outside the good part of the city. A club. An old club. A jazz club. This club harkens back to the days of jazz being played, improvised, and felt until the dawn hours. Shaded in blues, oranges, and the soft light of eternally dingy light bulbs, the Cat's Meow is a beacon to people to seek the magical combination of structure and improvisation that is the hallmark of jazz. The club is always there, and rarely raided, as if there's a deal with the city to let the troublemakers and iconoclasts gather in one place, keeping them out of everyone else's hair. The unusual and the artistic are drawn here, surrounded by the soulful and the experienced. The age of the place is obvious from every creak of the wooden steps, but the energy belies any tiredness that would come from that age. A patina of music, bourbon, laughter, and late nights is what is left. And that cat. The cat in the corner, wandering down from the upstairs apartment. The cat quietly sitting and watching the musicians play with a ferocity. And that cat is a constant. Or maybe its parents, as the murals on the walls from decades ago showed the same feline presence. The same cat's hungry and protective eyes. That same cat.
That is brilliant.
That wicked, dude. Absolutely yes. Wicked, man.
That. God, I want to use that in like a World of Darkness game.
World of Darkness, sci-fi, there are a bajillion ways to go.
Dear Lord, you can see that in Big Eyes, Small Mouth, you know, it's like something.
Yeah.
Heck, they did something kind of sort of similar in Trigun where it's always that cat.
Well, This was me going, I need a stat block. And my lovely wife going, huh, how'd you do what? And I kind of explained and I'm like, give me something to work with. It's like, jazz playing cat. Okay, I can work with that.
Oh, praise your wife on that one.
And lo and behold, and Zen saw me actually sit there in the Google Doc and jeez, just kind of start typing it. Yeah. So.
And he was just like, oh.
No, he's just so fast at it. Like, I am horrible.
Yeah.
Horrible.
This was literally like 5 minutes before we started.
I started at 8 because I've been working late and hubby's sick. So.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm like, hey, oh, God, I got to start working. And then.
Yeah, this could be an alien cat that is just kind of there. It could be a Gaki feeding off of the energy of the place. You could have some other supernatural cat feeding off the music. Yeah. You could have just a cat.
Yeah.
In a that jazz just, club.
All of his offspring looks
the
like
same. And with that.
Lexicon. Where we give you cool words to help improve your vocabulary.
All right.
Anti-disestablishmentarianism?
No, this is actually a...
Anti-disestablishmentarianism is a
it
good is. One.
It is a good one. But no, this is actually one that I'm going to assume that most people know.
Or have heard.
And that is the word rabid.
Oh,
as in, are you talking either, you know, having rabies or being psychotically violently angry?
Well, that
could be
is
as it could be either.
Yeah, because it actually has two distinct definitions. One is extremely violent or furious. Going to extreme lengths in expressing or pursuing a feeling, interest, or opinion, and affected with rabies. So, I mean, it does. It's both of those. So, yeah. I mean, it's not that it's an odd word, but it's one that is an easy way to describe someone rather than just saying, they're extreme. You know, the object of the lexicon is to improve that breadth of words that you can use to convey ideas, images, because that is how we tell the stories in the games that we're doing. You have to use words. So if you use words that aren't as common, people are more inclined to go, what? Or pay closer attention because they're not normal words. So, but it's from Latin, as lots and lots of things are.
If you are listening to this podcast, we assume there is some kind of a Latinate background in your upbringing.
Yeah, because... Latin is the root of so many. It's either Latin or German, generally speaking. So.
Yep.
But
English is a weird language.
Yep. It drags other languages into the dark alley, beats them up, takes what it wants, you know, in loose change.
Rifles the pockets for some change.
I heard go through his pockets and searching for loose participles.
Brum, boom, tsh.
Now, its first known use was 1594. This is actually one of the bottom 40% of words used in the English language. Mm-hmm. So, just fun little tidbits. So, yeah. But it's one of those things that's... I love doing these. I know for a long time I had a Twitter that was just every day it was a new word Monday through Friday, and it was a real short, you know, 140 word version of whatever the word was.
Well, hey, but it could be 280 now, 280 characters now.
Oh, I might go back to doing that again. That might be something that we set up.
Yeah, I can say everybody's got 280 characters now on Twitter.
Interesting.
But as we move on from our lexicon into the wide and expanded world of Twitter, it's the perfect time to move on to our closing remarks.
Yes, it is.
Right. Zen, you go first.
Okay, so I have finally started to catch up on a lot of my back shows. I had finished up Gotham finally on Netflix, and because I don't get a lot of time to watch TV, so my wife is always complaining. So I'm just like, we're just going to try to power through this. And I had a day off, so we powered through like almost all of Gotham. And then we finished it, and I'm like, okay, what next? And it was like, Bendis next. But the next day, we're like, what are we going to watch? And so we started watching Luke Cage finally.
Yes.
So
much so far behind. And I haven't. Don't spoil anything, because I literally have stayed away from all the spoilers for Luke Cage, Iron Fist, Defenders, and everything. So I'm happy not knowing what's coming in anything. And it's going to be one of those things, like Luke Cage has really, it really hit this fun, like, it's a great mix of the style that was in the 70s of blaxploitation, but it's done with a level of class and sophistication that you would not have expected.
It had the most distinct sense of time and place of all of the Netflix Marvel shows for me.
It really does. Like, it sits very firmly in where it is. And it's amazing that it fits so well with that. And I love that it's not set in Hell's Kitchen. It's set in Harlem.
Yes.
The thing is, though, also, you know, they, with the show, and I find this really neat, is they, it's not just, it's the location, it's the music, it's the actors they got. It's so perfectly put together where it's, you exactly know the roots.
It evokes a sense of Harlem and a sense of that Renaissance.
Yes.
Distinctly and cleanly.
Yeah. And it's really good. I am enjoying the hell out of it.
Yeah. It's honest and reverent to the source material without being so freaking tied to it that it loses any kind of impact in today's world.
All right, Jules, what do you have?
All right. I'm going to be, it's called October Pod. October Pod is a horror podcast. One of my bestest buds in the world is a horror aficionado. And I told him about, CZGM podcast and all the, and he's like, I always wanted to do this. I'm like, go and freaking do it. Do it, you know? And it's kind of, it's not the discussing on how to GM like we do. It's a storyteller. It's, you know, imagine like almost radio play-ish, you know, where, you know, it's, you know, it's like, hey, I was sitting, it's like, hey, did you hear that? And oh, it's amazing. It's instead of just a discussion, it's live action and mysterious and creepy. He just started it. Episode one's out. He's working on episode two. He's asked me to help. He's asked me to be on one of them. I'm like, totally cool, because he knows I like horror. He's better at it than, oh my, knowledge from like the beginning of horror cinema, books, phenomenal. But he has a wonderful sense of horror aesthetic. You know, what, you know, at least for people of mine and Garmanger's and your kind of generation kind of a thing. Yeah. So, and he nails it. The one thing I liked is, you know, he uses a whole bunch of really interesting sound effects. And I can't, with sometimes I'm like, is that because a microphone popped or did he put that in intentionally? And that's some of the things. It's also because it's two types, kind of like,
that's great.
So it's the, is this part of it, or was this, it's that kind of dual world kind of breaking thing. And I love that, because that kind of stuff really screws you up.
Yeah.
So, you know, give it a listen more. He's just starting it. Be patient. He's never done podcasting and all that other good stuff before. So,
well, that's cool.
But he knows his stuff. He knows his R.
I will have to check that out. I'm always on the lookout for new and interesting podcasts. So,
yeah. The byline is, at first I thought I found a German radio station, then it changed. Can you help me solve the mystery of the October pod?
Ooh.
Which I thought was kind of cool. All right, Garde-Manger, take us home.
All right, we talk a lot about storytelling and about what that means for GMing and for playing. And so I'm once again going with the more classical recommendations. And I'm going to recommend the Roald Dahl Omnibus. Now, you may know Dahl from Charlie and the Chocolate Factory or James and the Giant Peach, but this is a collection of 30 short stories, including short stories that go back to The New Yorker and his work in Playboy. These are masterful works of someone who is described as being able to blend four notable talents: an antic imagination, an eye for the anecdotal predicament with a twist at the end, a savage sense of humor suitable for stabbing or cutting, and an economical, precise writing style.
Wow.
Cool.
That
link in the doodly
sounds awesome.
Oh, yeah.
That sounds really cool.
I am tapping on my physical copy of it right now.
That is,
because
that's sharp.
It is.
Okay.
Oh, man. And I already submitted my Christmas list.
It happens. It happens.
Just get a big stocking and call it a stocking stuffer. Copy I've got's only like 3 inches tall.
Okay. Well, that's really cool.
I got it, man.
All right. Well, I think that's going to wrap it up for right now. And we will catch you guys next week.
Keep in touch, guys, over the holidays. Hopefully it might be a break from some of the crazy insanity you're going to be dealing with for the next couple of weeks.
Indeed.
Have fun in this mad, mad world.
You can contact us or the show by using Twitter, Facebook, or regular old email. Our Twitter accounts are @Zendead,
@JulesPodcaster,
and @NoOperations.
And the show's Twitter account is @SeizeTheGM.
And you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/SeizeTheGM.
You can email questions or comments to the show at admin@SeizeTheGM.com.
You can email me at Zendead@SeizeTheGM.com.
Me at Jules@SeizeTheGM.com.
And me at NoOperations@SeizeTheGM.com.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of Seize the GM. Feel free to leave a comment about this episode on our webpage, www.seizethegm.com. Let the dice fall where they may, and we'll see you again next week.
Seize the GM is released under Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, Share Alike 4.0 International License. All copyrighted materials referenced herein are held by the respective owners. No infringement is intended, and no claim of ownership is implied.
The music for the show is Dreaming Spirit, off of the album Ghost Machine, by the Enigma TNG. His music is released under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivatives 3.0 Unported License.